came up to Monroe from the plant down there, and they closed the plant down. And
well, see, that's one of the things we were discussing was, you know, why. Let's see, I have it on my question sheet, like the number of people who came and why they moved with the plant and why the plant closed. This is all background information that he's interested in.
Well, now the plant, and this was the more up to date. I think it was on the post up to the water and the navigation and that sort of thing. Now that's my idea now, but a lot of people came up here and helped the economy here in Monroe, although at the time a lot of the people, Monroe people, resented us coming up here.
Why is that?
Well, it was an old town, you know. It's a real old town, and there were all old settlers here, and they didn't like change. I think that's the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was, Tom?
What?
When did you come up here?
33,
and when did the plant open up here? About the year before?
Oh, before that, they started building the plant about 29, I think.
Well, I know, but it didn't open up in 29.
Oh, this was the Depression days, and it didn't work good there for a while, but I don't know just when it did open up, probably around 31 or 2 along in there. I don't know exactly.
The one in Monroe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you got that information.
I don't know. I've got his notes. You know, like I said, he's getting that to us in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bought the plant. They bought it for Ford Motors.
Yeah.
That
was during the war, you know, after the war started. But anyhow, as I started to tell you, I came up here in 33, June of 33, and I wasn't. You know, after you talked to me, and all this stuff was going through my head, stuff that I'd forgotten for so long. And I came up, we didn't have any money. I had taken care of a patient down there who was a high school principal, and he was kind of a stinker. And he didn't want to pay me, and he wanted me to come down to my wages, and I said, I cut them all I can cut. I charged him, I think, $5 a day, something like that, you know, for special duty.
Mm-hmm.
And we were.
This was his nurse at a school.
No, this it was in his home. He was sick in his home, and I was specialing him.
Okay,
see?
Okay.
And so he said, "I'll just pay you $5 a week." So I came up here. I had a place to go because the Smiths worked. He was. He worked out in the plant, and he was his foreman out in the plant, and I had worked for them when I went to high school, during high school, so they wanted me to come up, and I came up on the, a delivery truck. There was, they were delivering furniture up here. There was a furniture store in Monroe, in Newton Falls, and they were delivering some furniture, so I come up with the two men on the furniture truck. Anyhow, then I started working down there at that time, I think in 33. And I worked there about a year and a half, and they reopened the plant in Newton Falls. And I was transferred back down there.
Oh, so you worked up here, and then you transferred back to Newton Falls?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For 6 months. Then the plant closed completely then, and I was out of a job. But then I came back up here and I worked at Monroe, a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was married and I didn't work anymore. Oh, I did a little special duty or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But nearly all the people that were working down there at that time are gone. Like this man in the paper tonight, he worked down there. And there is one woman here in town, I don't know if she'd have any information for you or not. Her husband's been dead. He's dead for several years, but her husband was Fred Lingy. And
let me get the spelling on that. L-I-N-G-L-Y?
Yes, I think Lingy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that's. But she is remarried. She married a Trombley. You know, whether she would have any information on that. He worked in the payroll department, I think, is where he worked. I'm not sure about that.
Hmm. Okay, yeah, I can always give this to him and see if, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. All right, let's see. Stardust Housing. It says, where were the workers who worked in the, who were the, where were the workers who worked in the Newton Steel plant?
Where
were the workers from who worked in the Newton Steel
plant? Oh, most of them were from Newton Steel, or from Newton Falls. Yes.
Okay.
And,
so actually very few Monroe people then worked?
No, not at that time. No, that they may have taken in a few, but even the doctor in the plant came up. It was from Newton Falls.
Oh.
Dr. Mealy. We had a real nice medical department down there. I mean, it was a plant that took care of their people. I mean, it was a nice place to work.
Okay. Yeah, now see, that's, we're getting into that here as far as the wages, hours, working conditions.
Don't ask me what the wages were at that time because I don't remember. I can remember when I worked at Monroe Hospital, I made $4.34 an hour, or a day. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, now they're getting that in a, you know, easy an hour.
You get more than that in an hour now. My goodness, you get about $50 a turn for 8 hours now, I think. I don't know. I'd like to know what they need.
Okay, now, various departments, relations with management, relations between workers, anything at all
it
that
was,
you remember?
The relations were real well. Were real good between the departments and everything. It was a nice place to work. It was a small plant, you know. There wasn't, it wasn't spread all over the country like things are now.
Right, with a lot of branches.
Yes, And it was sort of like a family. You knew everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plant protection. Well, now we had a friend that worked on plant protection, and he was a Monroe man. He didn't come up here from Newton Falls. But most of the office managers and everything like that were from Newton Falls.
Hmm.
And there was a Mr. Torbick, he's long dead. He was over the whole plant. So I don't know. But there was three nurses on the shift down there. And Marge Shillady and I are the only ones that are left that I know of. Uh-huh. I know that Maggie Hassage came up and she died. She's been dead for quite a while. But,
okay. Let's see here.
We've kind of jumped around here.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Let's see. Can the workers in the Newton Steel Mill be identified with, like, any racial or ethnic group, any particular religion?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay. Any neighborhood? Any political party?
No.
Okay. Any type of social class? You know, like middle class, upper class?
No, I wouldn't say that. They were just common, ordinary, family. And that time we didn't have so much class distinctions or separations like they do now.
Yeah, because of the Depression.
Well, that might be, but even so, remember this was in 1933, and it's been a big change since 1933.
Okay.
So.
Okay, like any type of families. I think what he means there is, you know how like Ford Motor Company, everybody knows everybody, you know, as far as they all came like from one basic family or four or five basic families.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, no, this wasn't family-oriented, a plant at all.
Okay. Okay, best you can, don't worry about this one. Describe the city of Monroe during the Depression.
Oh my goodness.
he's trying to get a general idea of what...
Well, you would not believe what it's like, what it was like now when you look around here. This wasn't here. I mean, this development wasn't here at all. I don't know whether the armory was built at that time. But it was a country all around here. It was a very small town.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Newton Steel did help enlarge it a little bit, but it's been an industrial town most, but it has really grown in the last 20 years. It's unbelievable. Well, we've lived out here 30 years now, so we built out here. Well, we moved in 51.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, you haven't lived here for 20 years then. You lived somewhere else in Monroe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, when we first came here, when we were first married, we lived in an apartment up on French Street, just across Telegraph Road.
Okay.
And then we were there about it. That's how come I knew that this strike wasn't in 36. That's right, because we were married the 30th of June in 36.
Mm-hmm.
And this material that Marge Shillady had, she had written at the top of the 1937, and then it goes on under the pictures, it's June so-and-so, June 10th or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I knew when Mr. Honer was out that he was a little bit, because he said the strike was in 36.
Oh.
So,
no, it's 37. That all right? Yeah, that's definitely
yeah.
That I got down. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're right about that. It was.
Well, I think he's gotten straightened out on that now. if he went over to see Mrs. Shillady, he got straightened out on that.
That's really nice that she has those magazines too.
Well, though. Yes. I was supposed to tell you about this. She called me yesterday and she said that he'd been out because I was going to tell you about it. And then you.
Well, as you, you know, if you've talked to other people and that, you know, if they find somebody or whatever, don't hesitate to get a hold of either me or Dr. DeVries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, you know, like I said, he was really hunting to find students,
mm-hmm.
someone for them to interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. Well, you already answered that. How important was the Newton plant to the city of Monroe?
Well, I think it helped put it on the map. So then, well, then from here, they did open a strip mill in Cleveland. Because
mm-hmm.
after we were married, I don't know how we'd been married, maybe a couple years, and Tom was transferred up there.
Oh.
And he hated it. Of course, I trained him in Cleveland. I knew what it was like, and I liked it. Well, I wouldn't want to live there, but I had quite a few friends. And so I enjoyed the 6 months there, and then he finally had them transfer him back here because he didn't like it.
He just didn't like it. Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Why did people join or oppose the CIO? Yeah, the reason he has elaborate there is because he said it really took a lot of guts to join the CIO during those days
uh-huh.
because there was so much opposition
uh-huh.
to it. So, you know, if you know, like your husband said he was in the plant 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah, well, that was at the time.
And he, you know, he said that most of the people he knew were local people.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, and the strikers were outsiders.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
They were all outsiders. But why? They just wanted to organize the plant. I don't know why the unions wanted to butt in because we were doing fine. They did have a little local union of their own after this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were happy. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that the CIO has too much power. Really, I think it does. Because
back then, was it that powerful, though?
Not then. By it does now.
No. Okay.
Now, because it just controls so much. But it was just getting a toehold. See, they were just getting started.
Okay, like, did you and your husband know anybody personally who was in that CIO?
Mm-mm.
No?
Mm-mm. Not at that time. I wouldn't know.
You know, that was, you know, part of the Newton strike deal, you know, as far as...
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they definitely were part of, for the CIO getting their way at that point.
Well, the plant, a lot of the personnel in the plant didn't want the CIO. They never did get in down there at that time.
Okay.
Because, the mayor came in, you know, and he broke it up. No, they dumped the automobiles in the river. But you can imagine how I felt when Tom came home at midnight to get his gun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We were living in this apartment upstairs, and he came home one night at midnight to get his gun. I wasn't too happy about that.
No, but this was after the strike had started.
Yes.
Okay.
While they were, they were keeping the workers out. That's what the people outside had come in and weren't letting the workers in.
Mm-hmm. That's what he, so he came home and got his gun?
Yeah.
Now, once he got in the plant, though, he stayed in?
He did come home this one night to get the gun, because I think he had to was supposed to protect the powerhouse, and it was they were afraid that the strikers might come in on by water in the back way, see?
Oh.
And he didn't use it. You never know what's going to happen to him.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, describe in detail your day on the day when the picket line was broken.
That I wouldn't know. I guess we were all just happy that it was, and the men could go back to work. That's
Okay. Describe Monroe during the week or so when citizens were armed.
What?
When the mayor, you know, gathered all the citizens.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was even a week. I don't know how long it did last. He just went in there and they just threw them out, that's all. I think, I don't know whether he called in the militia or not, or, you know, the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't remember about that.
Okay. Well, were most people nervous about it, though?
They were all upset, yes. You know, I don't know whether the citizens were so much or not. Really, the citizens, it took quite a while for the citizens to accept the Newton Steel, and it was a different type of people that came in here. Some of them were roused about, you know, it was a little bit, just a little bit different.
Different from what they were used to?
Yes, uh-huh.
That's interesting. Okay. What were your thoughts and feelings about all these happenings?
Well, I think I told you that.
Okay. So you weren't worried about Tom losing his job as far as...
No.
Okay.
No, that was no problem.
Uh-huh. Okay. Did the strike have any lasting impact on the city or its people?
I don't think so. No. Eventually, the CIO did get in, but they came in... I don't know the CIO, but anyhow, eventually they were...
Unionized,
yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know how long. Tom was a little active in this little local union that they had in the plant, but when it just gradually, took over. The big unions just gradually took it over.
Okay.
I don't remember too much about that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We already covered that number of people who came and why they moved with the plant. Why did they move with the plant? Was it
because of the
economics?
Economics. A lot of them wouldn't have had any work if they hadn't have come up at that time. You know, that was a depression. It was bad, really bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, my dad's talked about those days. He was in Ohio at the time in Defiance. When he was alive, he used to say, "You kids don't know how good you have it."
Well, that's true, but really, I don't think at that time we didn't make much money, but we saved money. When we were first married, we lived in this apartment just across Telegraph Road in that first block there. It was an upstairs apartment. And then from there, I forget what rent we were paying, probably about $35 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went from there out to the lake and we had a home. It was a bit little better than a summer cottage, but it had three bedrooms and a living room, dining room, a nice kitchen, everything. And we paid $45 a month for that.
Wow.
And we stayed there, I would imagine, a year and a half, and we got another cottage up toward the road. It's still there, I think, for $15 a month, but it had no running water in it. We had to get, it was a pump out the back porch, and we had to carry our water, which was no problem. We were young, what difference? But we saved enough money in the 10 years that we lived there to pay cash for our house.
Hmm.
So, you know.
So even though with the things as bad as they were, you still managed to save?
We still saved money.
Huh.
And we didn't suffer. I mean, we had plenty to eat and everything.
Now, was most of Monroe people in that position or just the ones that worked like at plants? Or?
Well, at that time, they had all the paper mills in here and everything. And I don't know anything about the wages or anything in the paper mills. But we had some friends, real good friends that worked in the paper mill. They're gone, too.
Then the depression, it affected you, but not necessarily economically?
No, not that bad.
Hmm.
Well, you didn't have anything, so you didn't miss it.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
And you were just working to get ahead, that's all, and you did.
Yeah, today, now, see things.
And today, I feel sorry for the people today. Medical expenses are so high, if you have to go to the hospital, I don't know how people manage.
Yeah.
I really don't. And raising children, it's really bad.
Things just weren't that bad back during...
We thought they were, I guess. But we didn't have the pressures that the children have, the young people have today. You know, your peer pressures and all that.
It's.
I think that it is really bad to raise children, and that's my opinion. The young people don't mind it. I mean, they don't know anything any different. I know we have a friend, and their children. Well, he's the boy's 40, and I think the girl's 38, along in there. And they don't have any idea what a depression's like. It doesn't mean anything to them, you know. They don't know what it is to go without. And when you've gone without, anything else that comes along is is just all right. I know you want all that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I just didn't hear the sound, so I thought I'd better check it.
Oh.
No, it's pretty good. I just figured, you know, with Monroe, you know, like not being very big, that maybe they were hard hit here, you know, as far as by the depression. Like I said, with my dad, he talked about just eating potato soup, you know, and they felt lucky to get that.
Uh-huh. Well, there were an awful lot of people out of work, but somehow that they managed somehow or another. It isn't like it is today. You know, there's so many automobile workers out, and they are in bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get relief, you can go on relief, get some help from some of these agencies around here, but I guess it's pretty hard to get, you know.
In the Depression, they didn't have the agencies.
No, we didn't have anything like that in those days.
Hmm.
These have all come along, I guess, since Roosevelt's time or something like that.
Hmm. I know, I guess when nowadays when you think of people in trouble, you think of an agency willing to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm surprised that you're, you know, as far as in Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
I really expect you to say it was horrible.
No, I can't say that it was.
Hmm.
I can't. Of course, Tom's always had work. And of course, I worked then, too. I didn't work at first, but I didn't work until the war came along. Well, then they needed nurses. I mean, maybe I did a little special duty, but I mean, but I went in the hospital, and all during the war, I worked 4 years nights on OB.
Mm-hmm.
And that was during, at that time, it was a baby boom. Our OB wasn't that large. I worked up there with one aide, and we had 25 babies and mothers, and I had charge of the delivery room and the labor room. When a mother was ready to deliver, I called in help, and that's the only time. Outside of my aid, I'm telling you. And the patients at that time didn't get up until the ninth day, or ninth or tenth day. You know, now you have a baby, you're up and around. And
exactly. Some go home.
And go home in about 3 days. So we kept in 10 days.
Wow. No, I enjoyed that.
Well, you know, I look back and wonder how I did it.
Yeah, night shift deal too. That's
Well,
most women, they say, have their babies at night.
Well, one night, it was Christmas Eve. I'm telling you, it had rained and frozen. We had ice that thick on the road, and we had 4 patients in that night. One woman delivered, but she never got to the hospital. I guess she delivered at home. You couldn't make it. I see.
Jeez. So, now, they didn't have hospitalization then either for anything like that.
No, I worked over here at the hospital up until 1967. And at that time, they had no pension. When I quit working, they had no pension, nothing. And now they do, just about a year after I quit, and they got in a pension. And so, you know, that's recent. That's pretty recent. But there was no benefits at all. But when I worked in the hospital, you wouldn't have a baby for $75. You can't go and have a baby for $75.
Right? Right. $7,500, maybe. Wow. Okay.
We kind of got off of the...
That's all right. Well, as we go along, don't miss out. If you think of anything, just add it in. All I have to do is transcribe the tape, so...
Did you want this, me to fill this in? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I'll just write it down here, and then when I go home, I'll type it in for
okay.
you.
Okay, oh, I
okay,
see.
Okay, now the address, why don't we go over that just in case. I have it on a 3x5 card, but give it to me, your address.
5954 Oakwood.
5954 Oakwood, okay.
Because that's Monroe County, I guess.
Yeah. Michigan. Okay, place of birth.
I was born in Washington, Pennsylvania.
Washington.
Okay,
nationality.
I guess it's just American.
Okay. Language spoken.
Yes, the English language.
Okay.
Oh, golly.
Places and dates of habitation. Oh, my goodness, yes.
That fills in.
Okay, well, we'll start back when you were single in Newton Falls. How about that?
Okay. Well, then we come up here. And unless you want to... Well, we've been...
Okay, go as far back as you can remember.
Well, we lived in Ohio. I was born in Pennsylvania, but then when I was about 4 years old, we moved to Atwater, Ohio, and then from there to
Atwater, Ohio. Okay.
And then when I was a sophomore in high school, which would be about 1926, we moved to Newton Falls.
Okay.
And I lived there till I went in training.
So maybe what, about 16 years, 15 or 16?
I don't know if the lizard just exactly right.
That's all right. Don't let it concern you. Okay, here.
1928, I went in training, that's all.
Oh, okay. That was in training at Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put down here, nurse's training.
Celebrated my 50th anniversary from training in 81.
Oh, wow. Yeah, some of the college, they're...
Oh, yeah.
They have a good nursing program out there here.
I hear they do.
Yeah, okay. So then from Cleveland, Ohio, then we came...
Newton Falls, I was back in Newton Falls for about a year, I guess, or 6 months or something like that, and I came up here in 1933 of June, so I wanted to do that.
June 1933.
Well, I've been here ever since, you might as well say.
Okay. Well, then you and your husband moved to Cleveland for a little bit.
Oh, though. Yeah, for 6 months in Cleveland, that was...
I don't know. Okay, well, I'll just put down 6 months. What was the name of the... It was part of the Newton Falls.
It was a strip mill. It was when they first started up the strip mill. See, they used to make steets. Now they make it... Now it's all in coils, you know.
Okay.
So he was working in the strip mill. It was a new mill.
Okay, so that would have been for Newton.
Whether that's still there or not, I don't know.
Okay. The spouse's name is Thomas. Just Thomas, or does he have a middle?
Vivian. We put down V over the little V.
Well, why don't you go ahead and spell that for me?
V-I-V-A-N.
Okay. Okay, father's name. That would be your father's. Well, wait a minute, let's see. Yep, your father's
that's
name.
That's his spouse's. Oh, I don't know what his father's name was.
Yours. Your father's name.
Oh, my?
Oh, your father's name, your mother's name.
Oh, my father's name was Hiram.
Okay, how do you spell that?
H-I-R-A-M. Hiram.
Okay, what was his first name?
No, that's his first name.
Oh, okay.
Sort. S-W-A-R-T was his name.
Okay, right.
My mother's name was Effie Brees.
We have an Effie in our family. E-F-F-A-Y?
E-Y. E-I. E-I.
E-I? Okay.
Effie, isn't it? E-I-I-E? E-I-E.
Well, to now they spell it I-E.
I-E, that's it. I'm not very good in the spelling.
That's all right. Okay, then that.
Brees.
B-R-E-E-S-E. Okay, well, that's easy. Okay, your father's place of birth?
I think he was born in Washington.
Okay, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your mother's?
Oh, she was born in, Pine Ridge, Pennsylvania.
Pine Ridge? Is that two words?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
But that was, they lived out in the country.
That's original. I like that. Okay, goodness, grandfather's place of birth. Okay.
Well, that I don't know, because, but that's where my grandfather lived in.
Okay, I'll just put that on.
Pine Ridge.
Spouse's name, father's name. Grandfather's place of birth,
grandmother's. Well, do you know?
Well, I just wonder if they probably want Tom's and yours here from what I can see here.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what, I can't tell you too much about Tom's. You'll have to ask him because...
Okay. Okay, and your grandfather you didn't know, and your grandmother?
Her name was Florence Andrews. I gotta stop and think.
I know, I've done a little genealogy on the side, and sometimes it's really hard to...
Wait a minute, I think I got that information I can give you on time. Here's the old family tree.
My aunt has hers. It's all in a Bible.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Grandmother Ong. Is that what you wanted to know?
Okay.
Her name was Mary Louise Croft.
C-R-O-F-T.
Okay. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Okay, and her place of birth.
Let me see. She was born in England, London, England.
Oh. Okay.
Mary Louise Croft married William Jennings Ong. That would be his grandfather.
Okay, and where was he born? Does it say there?
William Jennings Ong. They were all born on a farm in Varna, Illinois.
V-A-R-N-A?
V-A-R-N-A, yeah.
Varna, Illinois. Okay.
Let's see, Charles Jefferson. I think his name was Tom. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, that was Tom's dad. He was born in Varna.
Okay.
And his mother's name was Dora Mae Rutan. And she was born in Winona.
Illinois?
Illinois.
W-I-N-O-N-A.
Let's see.
Everybody has two N's.
W-E-N-O-N-A.
W-E-N-O-N-A.
Yeah.
What was her last name? Dora Mae?
Rutan. R-U-T-A-N.
R-U-T-A-N. Did she spell that M-A-E?
M-A-E, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I guess that's it.
Okay. Oh, okay, one more. Occupations. We need that. And that would just be, really, well, you were a nurse.
Yeah. I was.
Right.
Retired, and Tom was a maintenance, machinist or mechanic, whatever.
Okay. Okay. Oh, I'm a little confused on why he's got two of those. I looked at that, and yet I never stopped and looked at it in that respect. Okay.
That it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether it was any good or not, but...
I enjoyed it.
Well, I really enjoyed having you here. Yeah.
Thank you.
You wanted to know about how they were paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all of the production was paid by tonnage.
Was paid by tonnage.
Besides the skilled trades and the common labor were, of course, paid hourly.
Mm-hmm.
But all the production work ever, all the way through the plant, was tonnage. Even the finishing part was tonnage work. And the rollers, the hot rollers, made the most money. Especially if they were on a large mill, what mm-hmm. they call a wider mill. And they were making as much as $30 a day in those days. And that was all take-home pay.
Wow, because you said, you know, what, yeah. $4 or $5
yeah.
a whole day.
Yeah, that was all take-home pay. And a roller on the big mill would make as much as $30 a day, which was good money in those days. But they earned it. It was a hot job, and it was hard work. Only they changed up. They only worked in those hot mills. They worked about a half an hour or 20 minutes, and then they were off 20 minutes. Another crew would take over.
Uh-huh, okay.
They changed off. So the helper would work for 20 minutes, and then the roller would. They changed off all the time. So they didn't have to stay steady at it. But they kept, when they went in their work, they don't shut down at noon and have lunch. They eat lunch when they can eat it. They don't stop. For they're in there 8 hours and they keep things going. They have to. Their furnaces are full of steel and they can't shut it down because their steel will get too hot.
So now did somebody have to work that during the strike then? They couldn't shut it down?
Oh, they're shut down. They shut down over the weekend. But what I mean, they couldn't shut down for an hour or so like that. They shut down for the weekend. They would shut down, they would be down Saturday and Sunday. They would start up Sunday night at midnight. And then they were three shifts. They kept these things, so there was three shifts. And they just kept moving. Until Saturday morning. Saturday morning, then they were done for the weekend. But there was one shift take over right from the other, and they never stopped the rolls. And they never shut the furnaces down, but they would shut the furnaces down on the weekends.
That hot job, we got a lot of people. A lot of the men would come over to the hospital, they would pass out from losing so much salt, there's iron.
Oh.
And they were miserable, they'd get cramps. And
they had...
heat exhaustion.
They had salt pill dispensers around here and there at the water fountains.
I was just wondering when you said that they passed out, if they had salt tablets back then.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But even with the salt tablets, sometimes they would... too much salt. And that's not very pleasant to come in there with those cramps.
You know, I was just thinking of too, what did salt cramps and the heat and that, was that basically like your job over there? Is that basically
yes,
what you saw?
Oh yeah, we had a lot of foreign bodies in the eye and cuts and sometimes we did have a real bad accident one time when I was working here. They had these sheets of steel piled so high, and some of them slipped. And one man, he was a classmate of mine at school, had both legs broken right in here. So, and then how good they were to their people. I specialed him at the hospital when he went in the hospital. I specialed him there, and doctor had a man from Cleveland come down and take care of him. A surgeon from Cleveland.
Okay, so they released you from the plant in order to go to the hospital special?
Dr. Mealy sent for this bone surgeon from Cleveland to come down here and operate.
But you were at the hospital with them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did she tell you that I got banged up down there too?
No,
uh-uh. Yeah, I was on maintenance there, and I got a call. I was on afternoon maintenance, and it was early afternoon when I took over the ship, and I got a call for a broken conveyor on one of the furnaces. And I had to get located at the right place in order to repair it, put a new link in, and we got it there. And I was working on it, and somebody started it up.
Ooh.
And caught me.
Oh no.
I was down there working on it, and caught me and threw it here. And across the eye went out, and somebody hollered or something. And they reversed it then, and got me out, and I called the name of Ike White, big guy, one of the crewmen there on that mill. Pulled me out as they backed the furnace up. I didn't know it because I was completely unconscious. They pulled me out, and they got me on a stretcher and took me to the first aid. And I came to when I hit the fresh air outside. They had to go outside for a short ways, and I hit the fresh air I came to. They took me to the hospital. I had 4 broken ribs and a punctured lung. Poked the lung through my rib, poked a rib through my lung. It crushed me in here. I have a...
That was painful.
I have quite a large patch on the back of my back
burn.
Now, where I was burned with that hot conveyor that had me caught, that burned the flesh there. And I was in the hospital 2 weeks. And I never saw it for a while after that. But they put me back, they got me back to work as soon as I could get out there, because they didn't like lost time accidents. They didn't like loss of time.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
Now, did they pay the hospital bill then? Because we were
talking about
that. Oh, yes.
They paid the hospital bill and everything. It didn't cost me anything. And in fact, I was paid through accident claim somehow, and I was making as much in office I was working, as far as that's concerned. I was making just as much money. All my expenses were paid. But they got me back on the job as soon as possible, as soon as I could get around. I said, you don't have to do anything. You just get out here. You don't have to do anything. We'll give you a helper. And you just tell them what to do. Don't do anything. That's the way they treated me till I felt like I was able to work.
Hmm.
They give me a helper and says, you just tell them what has to be done. And
they didn't rush you?
No.
Hmm. Well, it was a good place to work.
No, they didn't.
That's it. Sounds decent. It really does.
No, I had no quarrels with the supervision and management. They treated me all right.
Even during the changes, like from, what was it, from Newton to...
You didn't know the difference. Mm-hmm. Same personnel anyhow. Mm-hmm. Same personnel running the place. There was no change at the head of it here or nothing. Just the difference in the bookwork, I guess, or something. But as far as the work was concerned, you didn't see any change at all.
Okay. Well, give me the name of that second company.
Corrigan McKinney.
Corrigan McKinney. Okay. I wanted to get it on the tape just so I don't make sure I don't
forget
it.
I don't think that they were owned it very long, but they were in there a while. If I remember right, it wasn't very long till Republic took over Corrigan McKinney. I think his word came about. Republic was, Newton Steel was having trouble because by the time they got this plant built, it was right in the Depression time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got it built, it was obsolete.
Oh.
That plant was obsolete. The strip mills were coming into play then.
Okay.
And that caused these old hand mills, we call them, to be obsolete. And that's why the thing kind of went about. And they were getting bar from this Corrigan McKinney, and I think they got in debt for bar and so forth. So probably that's what it was. More than likely got in debt with buying this bar steel from them, and they just took them over. And probably the same thing happened with Republic. I don't know. Republic wound up taking them over. Republic's still in business. They're one of the big three.
I didn't know that.
There's U.S. Steel and Allegheny. And,
oh, yeah, I've heard that name now. I wasn't thinking of it in terms of that same company.
National Steel.
Great Lakes Steel.
Great Lakes is part of National.
Mm-hmm. National owns Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Division of it.
And I think U.S. Steel just bought them out, I guess. I think just took over National. Yeah, I believe so. But Republic's got, they're quite a large job, but I think they're about third. They got plants all scattered all over. They built this big plant in Cleveland, this big strip mill. And they were rolling stuff down there 90 inches wide, 95 inches wide. Sheet iron strip steel, 95 inches wide. And that was they rolled the widest strip when I was down there. They rolled the widest strip in the world that had ever been rolled. But the men there, United Engineering, that made a lot of the machinery, told me that they were making one for Russia 108 wide.
Wow.
They were making an outfit for Russia at that time. And that was about, back in along about, well, it'd be 36 long in there, 38, maybe.
Well, we were married in 36.
And that was later in 36.
And when did you go to Cleveland? Was it 38 or 39?
38 or 9 long in there. That's United Engineering. He told me they were making a steel mill for Russia at the time was 108 wide, would have been wider than the one in Cleveland.
Hmm. Big, huh?
I hope we're not boring you.
No. No, he's given us a lot of the background information in school, and I found it interesting.
But
I
then
I've
been away from the steel mill since the war. See, the government took that plant over during the war.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. The U.S. government took the plant away from Republic Steel during the war. They mm-hmm. come in there. I had just got through working on it. I'd been working on it a long time, setting up a four-high strip mill down there. It's a big outfit for a coal strip. Just got through with it. And the government took that plant over, and this outfit in Detroit came in and tore it down and never turned a wheel. Tore the whole thing down and sent it to Cleveland or somewhere. I don't know where they said it. I don't know. I worked on that thing for several months, setting up that whole outfit. There was generators. Each housing weighed up. 105 ton, I think it was.
Wow.
They got Darren Armstrong in there to tear it out. You heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
They came in and tore it down and got it out of there. And that plant was rebuilt then for making aluminum forgings.
The Republic Steel plant?
Yeah, the old Republic Steel plant was rebuilt by the government. The government owned it. They owned everything in it. The office equipment, chairs, everything. They owned everything. Everything was marked DPC, Defense Plant Corporation.
Oh.
And Alcoa operated it on a cost-plus basis. That's during the war.
I'll be darned.
Then after the war, they sold it to Kelsey Hayes Wheel. The government did.
Okay, now I've heard that name. And talking to people, that's a name that's come up. Okay.
Well, Alcoa wanted to buy it, but the government wouldn't sell it to them because of monopoly. and Ford wanted to buy it, but they wouldn't sell it to Ford. So Kelsey Hayes Wheel bought it for Ford. Kelsey Hayes Wheel was just in there the legal length of time, 2 years.
Oh.
And then they moved out and Ford moved in.
Interesting.
that's everybody around here, I think everybody knew that. Mm-hmm. Knew it was done that way. But
legal hall is what they call it, I was like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I left down there when, right after the war, when Alcoa, I worked for Alcoa during the war, and I, after they shut down, and I left.
Mm. Okay, well thank you, I appreciate it. I'll put that on with my notes. Give them some added information there. After you got hurt, they issued what?
Yeah, after I got hurt that time, they issued all maintenance men padlocks. And we were told anytime we worked on a machine to lock the switches out. And we had the only key for it. Mm. And nobody could turn the switch on. We pulled the switch out and locked it, and when we got through working on it, we could unlock it. But until that time, that's what brought it on us. When I got hurt, that's what brought the locks on.
Mm.